So, guys, we're sitting here right up against the draft here, and this is my 14th year of covering the National Football League. I've been here down for the films many years watching tape with you guys, trying to learn, and I look at this draft and I go, my mock draft is ruined. I can't figure out who to put in even the top five. Would you say this is the toughest year to figure it out, Jaws, who's going to go early?
I would probably say yes, and I think the reason, and by the way, I've been around the NFL for 40 years. So
1973,
yeah,
right?
A few longer. Wow. Hopefully I can give you a little bit of insight, but understand this. The draft is a crapshoot. No matter what year it is, no one really knows. But the fact that there's a lack of, a marquee quarterback, you know, it really kind of changes the dynamic of the draft, because usually we come in and we sit around and go, hey, it's going to be these three quarterbacks. It's going to be a battle for them. Where's it going to lay out? You know, everyone's projecting, making their analysis. This year we don't have that. I think the best quarterback is Geno Smith, and he may not even go in the first round, although I think he's a top 10 pick. That's just my personal opinion. So I think that's what makes this draft so unique and so hard to pinpoint.
We're talking about offensive tackles and offensive guards.
Right.
I mean, they're not tackle is somewhat of a sexy position, but guard is certainly not. And there's two guys who, my guess is, on most people's boards, you'll have two guards who are top 10, top 12, but it's real hard for an organization that hasn't played well for the GM to stand up and say, we just took an offensive guard at number 9, let's say. That's a tough thing to do.
Well, let me ask you a question. This brings up a good question here. Jonathan Cooper. I've talked to people in the league. They think he's the best interior lineman for this draft. Who cares whether it's top 10? If this kid's going to star for your Jaws 7 to 10 years, why don't you take him in Southern?
Yeah, I think that's an easy way to look at it. So this guy's going to be a quality football player and give us longevity. I think what Greg is talking about, I tend to agree with him. You know, there's a reason the team is picking in the top 10. They weren't very good the year before. Right. And I think the fans want to see impact kind of players. They want to see a Tavon Austin. So
they want to see guys who score touchdowns, yeah, sack the quarterback,
interceptions. All of a sudden, next year, you're going, hey, we only won 6 games, but we drafted Jonathan Cooper. Well, and he may have played great.
I understand.
But there was nothing that the fan could look at and say, hey, great draft. We got
you're
some production.
You're sitting in this room, and you go, listen, these great tackles went by number 5, let's say Lane Johnson goes 5 to the Lions, for argument's sake. Then it becomes a situation, you see 3 or 4 teams that need a guard, they need a receiver, you talk about Tavon Austin. Tavon Austin's a sexy pick, people love him, he may be the best receiver for this draft, but you see Cooper, who's going to, you know, is going to start forever.
Right.
How do you sell it, Greg, in your room?
I don't know how you sell it. I mean, unless you're just, look, if you talk about taking the best player available, then you got to stick by your board and take the best player available. I think there's been, and I hope there's been, a change in sort of this value concept. You know, I think number 2 receivers have never been viewed as players you take unless it's the 2nd, 3rd, or 4th round. But in a league where you use more receivers, it's just math. The number 2 receiver, when there's 3 or 4 receivers, is more valuable. And that's the way it works in the NFL. And I think there's a lot of receivers in this draft, and I guarantee when the draft hits Friday night, which is round 2, if receivers are taken, you're going to hear people say, oh, they reach. They shouldn't have done that.
Right.
And I would say, well, why wouldn't you do that? It's a passing league. You need quality receivers. Why shouldn't you take receivers even late 1st round, early 2nd round?
This brings up a value situation, Jaws. You played in the era of the tight end when it's just started to become popular. You got Kellen Winslow, the first move tight end. Ernie Zampezi. You got Don Coryell's offense. Greg, you see the tight ends now. You see Tyler Eifert. You see Zach Ertz. You see Escobar. You see McDonald. This is one of the best drafts we've seen for tight ends in years. But would you take a tight end in the top 10?
I would.
Okay, why?
Yeah, and again, the history suggests in this decade, there have been 2 tight ends taken in the top 10, both at number 6. It was Kellen Winslow Jr., and it was Vernon Davis. And you could make an argument about Vernon Davis. Kellen Winslow had some great years, by the way, before injury sort of derailed his career. But I've talked to a ton of defensive coordinators, and you know what they tell me, Adam? That the toughest personnel package to match up to is what we call 12. 1 back, 2 tight ends, and 2 wide receivers, where one of those tight ends is a move guy and can line up everywhere. Very difficult to match up to. Why isn't a tight end more valuable then? I don't understand. People are left over from 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Greg's absolutely right. Who has revolutionized the game the most over maybe the last couple of years? Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez.
Sure.
I remember that draft.
Why
aren't
Jimmy Graham?
Jimmy Graham, a basketball player.
Okay.
So
why are more teams doing
it?
Bill,
they will. That's why Greg just puts more of a value on tight ends. They are matchup nightmares. Tony Gonzalez came back this year not because he can still run a 4.7 40 and fly down the field. He's smart. He's intelligent. He bodies up. It's a mismatch for Tony Gonzalez on a safety or even a diminutive linebacker. So that's the value of the tight end. I'll tell you what, it's the easiest pass for a quarterback to complete. You work that hash area, it's the shortest throw, it defines itself quickly. That's why the tight ends in this draft, I think, are going to be very valuable and at a premium.
Now, we look at defense, and I asked one executive, I said to this guy, give me your top five players for the next 4 years. He said, you start with Deion Jordan. I said, Deion Jordan, really? He hasn't really played a lot. He goes, you know what? You see this hat? You don't find anyone who can play like this kid. Yeah. You move him everywhere, okay? Using your favorite term, both of you guys, the Joker role. The late Jim Johnson would have loved this guy because you could move him around.
And I agree with that. Yeah. And I was fortunate to be at the scouting combine on the field, standing next to this kid and watching him move, and I was 10 feet away. And not a lot of people move like that. You know, that's the thing.
He's
6'6", 250 now. He looks, his waist is like a supermodel. He could probably gain 20 pounds. You know, he could probably be 265 and 270 and still look thin. And I think when you look at this kid and watch him on tape, and he didn't rush the quarterback a ton, but there were plays where you saw the flexibility, the ability to get low, bend the edge, as they say. I think this kid has tremendous, tremendous upside. You might not see it right now, but keep in mind, someone like Alden Smith with the Niners, his first year 2 years ago, he only played in their sub-packages. He didn't play one snap in the base defense.
I had a chance to watch Deion on tape, and obviously fell in love with his talent. He's going to be a pure pass rusher. Had some time with him last week up at ESPN studio. Okay. Spent a couple hours with him. Great kid. And the other thing that really jumped out at me is his long arms. Yeah, he's got a long, sleek body. But, you know, we're all seeing now the value of batted balls. J.J. Watt a year ago.
Great point.
Those are
point.
Valuable things to understand about the pass rush.
Coaches coach that.
They now coach it. It's part of their coaching philosophy. And you got this guy, they were like, he had arms like Harold Carmichael. You know, he walk and he touched the ground, you know. And all of a sudden you're putting those big old arms up in the air. Jordan's going to bat down a lot of balls.
Now, you guys know Billy Davis. That's been around the league a long time. How would a guy like Deion Jordan fit in the Eagles' defense?
I think he'd fit great because I think what the Eagles want to be is what a lot of teams are now, or trying to be, which is a defense that's very multiple, we call hybrid defenses. Where, yeah, every team has a base front, we know that. But I think what the Eagles are trying to do is, particularly in their sub-packages, have a lot of different looks with as many flexible, versatile players as they can. And you made a great point about Jordan. Is he in a 3-4 front and outside linebacker? Yes. But in a sub-package, you can line him up in the middle. Jaws made the point about knocking passes down. You rush him from the middle, he gets his hands up. You know, that's tough to see over.
And remember, it's rare in the National Football League. You usually don't have two really good pass rushers on both sides. It's hard to find that. You put him on the opposite of Connor Barwin. I mean, you got something pretty interesting
you
there,
do
right?
there.
This is the great thing about having those edge pass rushers. It forces the quarterback to step up. That allows the interior of the defensive line to really be productive and wreak havoc on the quarterback.
And an extra hit, right?
And after played the position for 17 years, the one thing I hated, and I know every quarterback I speak to, from Aaron Rodgers to Mark Sanchez, they hate quick pressure. They hate to see the other team's jersey in their face quickly. Not only breaks on their definition down the field, but it forces them to move. And that's why the quick edge pass rush is so critical.